Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
Facing an enemy that embeds itself among civilians, who hides in and fires from schools, from hospitals, makes this incredibly challenging. But the daily toll on civilians in Gaza, particularly on children, is far too high.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken criticizes the civilian death toll in Gaza, but refuses to call for a ceasefire. As Blinken continues his Mideast tour, we'll speak with the first Biden political appointee to resign over the administration's policies in Gaza.
My name is Tariq Habash. I'm a former Biden administration political appointee. I was the first political appointee to resign from my position in the administration due to the ongoing administration's policies with respect to millions of Palestinian lives in Gaza.
Then, is Israel using starvation as a weapon of war in Gaza?
At least 1 million Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, half of them children, are starving. They are starving because of Israel's deliberate use of starvation as a weapon of war against the people it occupied.
We'll go to Tel Aviv to speak with the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem about their new report, Israel is Starving Gaza, which finds starvation is not a byproduct of war, but a direct result of Israel's declared policy, they say. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israel's intensified its bombing and ground assault in central and southern Gaza. Dozens of people were killed in overnight attacks, including in the so-called safe zone of Rafah City. In the occupied West Bank, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas in Ramallah today as protesters outside condemned the U.S. funding and backing of Israel's devastating assault on Gaza, which has now killed over 23,000 Palestinians in just over 3 months. On Tuesday, Blinken met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, reaffirming the U.S.'s unique bond with Israel, advocating for a regional resolution that, quote, includes a pathway to a Palestinian state. Blinken addressed reporters in Tel Aviv.
We want this war to end as soon as possible. There's been far too much loss of life, far too much suffering. But it's vital that Israel achieve its very legitimate objectives of ensuring that October 7th can never happen again. In today's meetings, I was also crystal clear. Palestinian civilians must be able to return home as soon as conditions allow. They must not be pressed to leave Gaza.
Blinken also rejected South Africa's genocide case against Israel at the International Court of Justice, which starts Thursday, as meritless. A staggering 1.9 million Gazans have been displaced, over 85% of the territory's population. This is 8-year-old Abdel Jaber Mohamed Al-Farah in Khan Yunis, who was forced to flee his home with his father and younger brother.
We were living safely. Now we are left in the streets. No tent or anything. We are staying in the street. We have no place or anything. I never saw bombing like this in my life. I was in third grade. I did not complete my school year. This is something I never saw in my life. The situation is very tragic. We're asking all countries to send aid, open the Rafah border crossing to get all the aid in, to end the war, end this injustice against us.
Academics for Peace, a grassroots group of Israeli-American and Jewish-American scholars, have released a petition with over 2,000 signatories, including five Nobel laureates, calling on the U.S. to lead negotiations on an immediate ceasefire, a hostage-prisoner exchange, and getting humanitarian aid to Gaza. Academics for Peace write, quote, 75 years of displacement, 56 years of occupation, and 16 years of blockade have generated an ever-worsening spiral of violence that can only be stopped with a political solution, they said. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors Tuesday passed a resolution calling for a sustained ceasefire in Gaza. It's the latest municipality to call for a ceasefire, even as the U.S. government refuses to do so. Last week, Bridgeport became the first city in Connecticut to adopt such a measure, and the Albany Common Council also approved a ceasefire resolution. Meanwhile, protests continue against lawmakers who refuse to demand a ceasefire and an end to U.S. support for Israel's assault. In Revere, Massachusetts, constituents of Democratic Whip Catherine Clark held a procession carrying white bundles to represent the shrouded bodies of more than 9,000 children who've been killed in Gaza. The protest ended in front of Clark's home, where Palestinian Americans delivered speeches. This is Leah Kiley.
I will not appeal to your false sense of morality. It is obvious that politicians like you only speak the language of power. So hear me when I say this. Do not underestimate our power. We, your constituents, are your bosses. And as people of conscience, we charge you, Representative Clark, with genocide.
Here in New York, constituents of Congressmember Elise Stefanik sent a letter urging the Republican lawmaker to, quote, resign immediately for your aiding and abetting genocide of Palestinians in Gaza by voting to send arms to the IDF to perpetuate the crime in violation of the Genocide Convention, unquote. Judges for the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals expressed skepticism as they heard arguments from Donald Trump's legal team Tuesday over his 2020 election subversion case. Trump's lawyers claimed he should receive immunity from criminal charges, arguing a president can only be charged with a crime if they've already been impeached and convicted by Congress. This is Judge Florence Pan questioning attorney Dijon Sauer as Trump looked on.
Could a president order SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival? That's an official act in order to SEAL Team 6?
He would have to be and would speedily be, you know, impeached and convicted before the criminal prosecution.
But if he weren't, there would be no criminal prosecution, no criminal liability for that?
Chief Justice's opinion in Marbury against Madison and our Constitutional Tradition and the plain language of the Impeachment Judgment Clause all clearly presuppose that what the founders were concerned about was not.
I asked you a yes or no question. Could a president who ordered SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival who was not impeached, would he be subject to criminal prosecution?
If he were impeached and convicted first.
Following the hearing, Donald Trump warned of bedlam if the Justice Department's case against him damages his chances at re-election. Trump also warned he'd go after Biden if re-elected.
He has to be careful because that can happen to him also. The next president, whoever that may be, has a statute of limitations that go back 6 years. That's a long time, Joe. You have to be very careful.
Ecuador's President Daniel Noboa on Tuesday declared a state of emergency and internal armed conflict as drug trafficking violence continues to soar. Noboa's announcement came a day after one of Ecuador's most notorious drug lords escaped from prison, and his hooded and armed men interrupted a live TV news broadcast, taking the staff hostage. Noboa designated at least 20 drug trafficking organizations as terrorist groups, authorizing Ecuador's military to do whatever it takes to suppress the crime factions.
A partir de este momento, From this moment, all terrorist groups identified in the presidential decree is a military target. The present and the future of our homeland is at stake, and any act of terror will make us give in. We will not step back nor negotiate. Public good, justice, and order can't ask for permission or bow their head in front of terrorists.
Norwegian lawmakers voted 80-20 to allow deep-sea mining despite widespread warnings and condemnation from scientists, environmentalists, as well as the UK government and the European Union. Norway's government says seabed exploitation could help power an economy less reliant on fossil fuels. One of the Earth's remaining untouched habitats, the deep sea, contains raw materials including cobalt, zinc, and gold. Under Norway's new plans, companies will have to apply for exploration licenses and exploitation permits. The Environmental Justice Foundation called the decision an irrevocable black mark on Norway's reputation as a responsible ocean state, adding, quote, "We know so little about the deep ocean, but we know enough to be sure that mining it will wipe out unique wildlife, disturb the world's largest carbon store, and do nothing to speed the transition to clean economies," unquote. Last year was the hottest year on record. The Pentagon has vowed to do better after Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's prostate cancer diagnosis was disclosed Tuesday. President Biden received the news about the same time as the general public. This comes after revelations Biden and top Pentagon officials were also kept in the dark for several days about Austin's hospitalization last week following complications from the treatment. White House Chief of Staff Jeff Zients ordered a review of cabinet protocols for delegating authority, while some Republican lawmakers are calling for Austin to step down amidst the mounting controversy. Austin's doctors say he's expected to make a full recovery. Here in New York City, the first group of migrant families have been evicted from their temporary shelter as city officials begin to enforce a 60-day limit. About 40 migrant families were forced to leave a hotel in Midtown Manhattan Tuesday, where many had been staying for over a year. Some reapplied for access to shelter as they have nowhere else to go.
We're human beings and need to be relocated because we need a roof to stay under, even more now that it's colder. They should think about the kids. I know it's not an obligation because they didn't ask us to come here, but if you see what someone goes through for someone to arrive here, it is hard.
The time restriction was imposed by New York City Mayor Eric Adams in October, claiming it was necessary to relieve the city's shelter system that he says has been overwhelmed by the arrival of thousands of asylum seekers. About 70,000 migrants are currently being temporarily housed in hotels, tent camps, and shelters for unhoused people. New York City Controller Grad Lander rebuked Mayor Adams' claims.
Everybody at the row had a room. We're kicking them out of their rooms. You can't say we don't have room. They're in rooms.
Do we need more money to provide more space? Yes. But I've talked to dozens of churches and synagogues and mosques who want to provide their space. We need federal help, but we also need better management from City Hall and some basic compassion.
Meanwhile, another 500 migrant families were relocated from a massive South Brooklyn tent camp to a nearby high school Tuesday night as heavy rains and winds hit the area. The Floyd Bennett Field Camp is set up on an isolated former airplane runway off the bay. The Labor Department issued a final rule Tuesday extending benefits and other protections to millions of hourly and low-wage gig workers. The move reverses a Trump-era rule and reclassifies independent contractors as employees, allowing them to access minimum wage, overtime pay, unemployment insurance, and Social Security benefits. Janitors, home care workers, construction workers, and truck drivers are among those who stand to benefit from the change. Businesses are expected to launch legal challenges and rideshare companies Uber and Lyft, which have been fighting the new policy, said they will not reclassify drivers, that the Labor Department could move to force both companies to abide by the new rule. And U.S. police forces killed over 1,200 people in 2023, making last year the deadliest for murders at the hands of law enforcement in at least a decade. That's according to data from the group Mapping Police Violence, which showed an average of about 3 people killed by police daily. This includes the fatal beating of 29-year-old Black father Tyree Nichols in Memphis, who died 1 year ago today after being assaulted by officers from the elite Scorpion unit during a traffic stop. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we speak with the first Biden political appointee to resign over the administration's policies in Gaza. Stay with us. Matar Naim, Soft Rain by Ferkat Elard. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show looking at Gaza, where the death toll from Israel's assault has topped 23,300. On Tuesday, during a trip to Israel, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the civilian death toll in Gaza is, quote, far too high, but he refused to call for a ceasefire.
Facing an enemy that embeds itself among civilians, who hides in and fires from schools, from hospitals, makes this incredibly challenging. But the daily toll on civilians in Gaza, particularly on children, is far too high. We want this war to end as soon as possible. There's been far too much loss of life, far too much suffering. But it's vital that Israel achieve its very legitimate objectives of ensuring that October 7th can never happen again.
That was Tony Blinken speaking in Tel Aviv after meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Blinken met with Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas today in Ramallah in the occupied West Bank. During Tuesday's press conference, Blinken went on to say Israel must not press Palestinians to leave Gaza and that the region needs to find a pathway to a Palestinian state.
We continue to discuss how to build a more durable peace and security for Israel within the region. As I told the Prime Minister, every partner that I met on this trip said that they're ready to support a lasting solution that ends the long-running cycle of violence and ensures Israel's security. But they underscored that this can only come through a regional approach that includes a pathway to a Palestinian state.
Blinken's trip to Israel and the Middle East comes as the Biden administration faces mounting criticism for supporting and arming Israel's assault on Gaza. We begin today's show with Tara Kabash. Last week, he became the first Biden appointee and just the second administration official overall to publicly resign from the Biden administration to protest Biden's support for Israel's war on Gaza. Tara Kabash is a Palestinian-American Christian who worked as a senior official at the U.S. Department of Education. In his resignation letter, he wrote, quote, I cannot stay silent as this administration turns a blind eye to the atrocities committed against innocent Palestinian lives in what leading human rights experts have called a genocidal campaign by the Israeli government, unquote. Tara Kabash, welcome to Democracy Now! Thanks so much for joining us. Can you talk about your decision making? At what point you decided you had to leave the Biden administration, how long you've worked for him, and what you think of what's happening right now?
Thank you so much, Amy, and thanks, Juan. For me, this was an incredibly difficult decision. In a lot of ways, I was working my dream job. I was working for a president who, for years, touted himself as an individual of empathy, an individual, a president, a leader who cared about our education system, about labor rights, about health care, about the environment. In a lot of ways, I was extremely aligned with the entire domestic policy agenda of President Biden, and I was able to work on issues that I truly cared about. I was part of the administration from the very beginning, coming up on 3 full years working in this administration. And even before that, I volunteered my time as someone who assisted the campaign on the policy development of that agenda with respect to higher education and student debt. But it was really difficult as someone who both cared deeply about American democracy and cared deeply about improving the lives of millions of Americans to also feel like it was untenable to work for and represent an administration and a president that put conditions on my own humanity, that didn't believe that Palestinian lives were equal to the lives of other people. And, you know, that's just a really, really hard thing to deal with. And so for me, it wasn't a particular moment in time. I think it was a culmination of near daily dehumanization of Palestinian lives in Gaza, in the West Bank, and policy and rhetoric that never really shifted over the last 3 months. And I think we even heard that yesterday from the Secretary of State, unfortunately.
And Tariq, I'm wondering, did you try to express your perspective or your viewpoints to people in the administration? And I'm wondering also what the response was of your direct boss, Education Secretary Miguel Cardona, when you decided that to resign.
Yeah, I mean, I used every avenue available to me to be able to express my concerns, both about the language that the administration, the White House, was using to express concerns about the policies and how it undermines the president's message on protecting democracy, on how it undermines our stature across the international community with respect to, like, being humanitarians and caring about human life. I spoke with the secretary on numerous occasions about this issue. I spoke with the assistant secretaries. I spoke with the secretary's chief of staff. They're all extremely understanding of my personal plight and my personal frustration. And, they were very supportive of me on a personal level, emotionally understanding, checking on me to make sure that I was doing okay. And even in circumstances where the White House did listening sessions and had policy briefings for staff in particular, you know, I was there. I tried to raise concerns, as did many of my peers and colleagues. I think there was a different tone in the reception from the White House than, say, the Department of Education in particular. But I think the outcomes, unfortunately, didn't change anything. I think we continued to see doubling down on the current policies that have led us to where we are today, which is the unconditional support of military funding and resources to an extremist Israeli regime that continues to both indiscriminately bomb Palestinians in Gaza and starve millions of people.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you had participated in the President Biden's original campaign. What do you sense is the implication for his reelection campaign of the deep dissatisfaction, not only among employees in his administration, but of young, progressive and liberal Americans across the spectrum?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are huge implications. I think we're already seeing those implications. The president is now really gearing up for the 2024 election. We're months away, and we're seeing his poll numbers really hitting real lows, particularly in communities that are predominantly minority, predominantly younger. We're seeing a backlash, I think, in part to these policies and to our response. And it feels like it's out of touch with the president's message around protecting democracy from authoritarianism. I think the president has spoken very directly to the American people about how important 2024 is in terms of protecting our democracy. I think that is absolutely true. But it's also just not in line with the foreign policy approach to the region and to Gaza in particular, as we are seeing the president and the administration provide unconditional support to an authoritarian Israeli government.
Tara Kamash, what has been the response of your colleagues to quitting? And you talked about the difference between the response of the Department of Education and the White House. Have you gotten word from the White House?
I haven't heard from the White House. I have heard from countless colleagues across the federal government, people who I've worked very closely with, people who I didn't have the opportunity to work with, and people who we had numerous touch points across the 3 years that I was at the Department of Education. And that response has been incredibly supportive. I couldn't imagine the level of understanding and support and alignment with so many people. I think we've heard a lot about the level of dissent across the federal government with the administration's current policies. I think we've seen numerous dissent cables from the State Department be leaked. We've seen letters from USAID, from dozens of federal agencies, from interns dissent within the White House. I mean, it is across the board. But I think there's also so much more that we don't even realize, because there are limitations to how people can share that information and use the channels that are available to them. For me, at the Department of Education and other domestic agencies, there aren't the same types of private channels that State Department has for dissent cables for foreign service officers and other employees. I was fortunate because I had leadership that cared about me on a personal level, that wanted to check on me, and told me that if there were things that I wanted to communicate to the White House, to the highest levels of the White House, those messages would be communicated. The vast majority of people don't have that level of access and support from their leadership, from their agencies, and they don't have those structures in place. So I think in a lot of ways, the White House doesn't even know the level of dissent within its own ranks, and I think that's concerning.
On Monday, President Biden spoke at the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. That's where the white supremacist Dylann Roof shot dead 8 black parishioners and their pastor in 2015, Clementa Pinckney. Biden's speech was disrupted when a group of activists started chanting, "Ceasefire now."
Without light, there's no path from this darkness.
As the protesters called for a ceasefire and were removed from the church, supporters of Biden started chanting 4 more years. President Biden then addressed the protest.
I understand their passion, and I've been quietly working. I've been quietly working with the Israeli government to get them to reduce and significantly get out of Gaza. I'm using all that I can to do.
I was wondering, Tariq, if you think President Biden's line has changed at all. I mean, reports are he's called his top aides to the White House absolutely furious why his poll numbers are so low. When the poll figures show, people are so dismayed at what's happening now. I wanted to quote a retired Israeli Major General Yitzhak Brick, who conceded in November, all of our missiles, the ammunition, the precision-guided bombs, all the airplanes and bombs, it's all from the U.S. He said, the minute they turn off the tap, you can't keep fighting. You have no capability. Everyone understands that we can't fight this war without the United States, period. Talk about what you think Biden understands and what he needs to do right now.
I think it's really important to recognize that, you know, American voters see this